And so she went into the barbershop and she said, "We think that you're experts in how you support the mental health of this community. And we have a tool called Solution Focused Practice that we think you're already fully on board with and you might be interested in learning a little bit more about." So we developed a model that we want to test out to see if it is relevant to your community called Curve Chats.
That is simply focused with every channel and Dominic Gooda for live and joy and ease.
Are you ready for this new episode? Then please welcome your hosts, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godin.
Hello and welcome to episode number 91 of the Simply Focused podcast. We are here on Zoom with Naomi Whitehead. Hi, Naomi.
Hi.
Naomi, you're in Sheffield in the UK at the moment, and we are here in Switzerland. So thank you very much for being here on Zoom with us today.
Oh, it's an absolute privilege because I remember discovering your podcast of years ago and thinking, oh, what's this? And I had a listen and I remember thinking instantly, wow, this is something that is giving an equal voice to solution focused practitioners all over the world and inviting people to say things on a platform which is fair and invites people to notice things that are particularly distinct about their practice with different types of clients.
Thank you very much. We met at the UK ASFP conference and it's so great to see you online here.
Even since before we met for the first time, we were in contact via Facebook and I was always inspired by your posts and, you know, the way you look at things. And then I was very excited to finally meet you in person and even more excited to finally have this conversation here with you on our podcast. So thank you very much again. You're a solution-focused coach, therapist, and trainer of Naomi Whitehead Training, and you're also an associate of solution-focused trainers and solution-focused Sheffield, where you give trainings to upcoming solution-focused trainers, practitioners, and also invite international people to share their solution-focused work with your community. And you have a lot of experience in social care, such as youth offending, harm reduction, substance misuse, homelessness. So you worked in this field for many, many years, and also in the field of management. So you're also consulting organizations, supporting them to become more solution-focused or to put their preferred future and the focus.
You're also involved with UK ASFP and host the Sheffield Regional Interest Group, were editor of Solution News, and are board member of the EPA. So there's so much experience, and we're very, very curious. What is it that fascinates you about solution focus?
Well, I think what really, really fascinates me is that when you ask solution focus questions to somebody, it's very gentle, it's very affirming, and it's very curious. I think it's those three things combined. And because of that combination of style, in a way, that you bring to a solution-focused conversation, what I notice frequently emerges, particularly, for example, in response to the miracle question, is that people simultaneously notice what has been incredibly challenging and what's wanted in the same moment. And I think there's something really fascinating that solution-focused practice enables the acknowledgement of people's challenge and then in the same breath allows people to see what better looks like or what their preferred future looks like and to see what they truly deeply value. And then when you're holding with the gentle pace of the conversation, that duality, I think that people then start to explore and navigate and amplify what is more beautiful and what is more profound and important and enjoyable for them while having the space to maybe cry and become emotional about where they've been. And I think that is a very skillful approach in holding up.
So how do you do that?
Well, I think to begin with, it's being as tuned in as you possibly can. Your own core, particularly a few moments before a client or before training, so that you're kind of at peace and you've got the ability to be really present and sort of set yourself free then to bring your sort of charisma and passion, but also a stillness so that once you bring that charisma and passion and look at that person with such belief and say, so tell me, imagine things were just that little bit better, what would that look like? And then the pausing. So there's two colleagues that really influence my style, and one of the, well, many of my colleagues actually, So the first thing I want to say is when I first became a trainer for solution-focused trainers 5 years ago, I've been using solution-focused practice for 17 years. But when I specialised in solution-focused practices, I worked for John Wheeler. And after the first day that I had delivered day one of the five-day training, I phoned him and said, I can't do this. Oh, what am I doing? Because I was training his course. And he gave me this sublime coaching session, which enabled me on day two to suddenly own the course in the way that was going to play to my particular styles and dynamism and sort of desire for the kinesthetic activities, and also gave me this sort of patience to really listen and enjoy the group. So sort of it's combining everything that they offer and everything that you offer, and then kind of dancing through that conversation in the training capacity. So I think that sort of being as authentically you as you possibly can be, and trusting that that will be perfect for your audience, and then trusting your participants or your clients, fundamentally trusting that they are going to discover everything that they need to. And I think being around John Wheeler always makes people feel that they are already perfect, and whatever next step they take, it will probably be very valuable to them. And he creates this kind of quiet atmosphere for people to flourish. And then Matthias Schwab, my other colleague, invited me to notice a lot over the years about sort of the void and embracing the void and that silence, because it's from embracing that silence and emptiness and nothingness that really unique, bizarre or unusual outcomes and possibilities and conversations unfold.
And you mentioned a third person.
Yeah, I love your attention to detail. Yeah, I was going to come on to talk about Tara in a different context. So the way that Tara Gretton, when we've done peer supervision together for many years, and then we were co-facilitating one of my certificate days up in Sheffield, we did a role play, well, a real in therapeutic interview. And the way that Tara used her strengths cards and handed one to me and said, and the way she looked at me and said, so go on, like, you know, what does that do for you? You know, where does that take you? It just brought me alive in those moments. And since then, I decided to utilize strengths cards in my own practice. And I've been doing something for many years using different colored sand and little tiny kiln jars and inviting people to think about what their strengths and qualities are by choosing strengths and qualities and then choosing a color of sand to match that strength and quality and then pour it into the kiln jar to create a pot of power. And that's been really reinforced by the use of the actual physical cards that people can select from. All my clients are really fascinating. And one client in particular recently did this pot of power. And he is a very, very young man in primary school. And he has a number of challenges. And he's just recently experienced quite a severe trauma. And after he'd done the activity, I said to him, so what's been particularly useful about that today? And he said, that activity has helped me know what I am. And he's somebody who's very reluctant to make eye contact or have physical contact. And he smiled while making eye contact. And it felt like it had made such a difference to him. So I think that that's what's fascinating, is that solution-focused practice is such a celebration of who people already are. And that, so for example, in my other work, when I'm supporting people who've experienced homelessness, I think that they can sense the lens through which you are looking at someone, which is genuinely, they are going to teach me things and that they are absolutely an expert in many things I'm not, and I'm just going to find out curiously from them, how do you cope with doing six different things in a morning when you're dealing with street homelessness and you have to feed yourself and then you have to go and manage your rehabilitation and then you have to access a hostel place for that evening, and how do you balance those priorities? And people start to say, well, I've never thought of it like I'm resourceful. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the experience we made in the US, where we met a lot of people who live in their cars, for example, or also who live in the street. And since we also lived in a car, it was really, really easy to have conversations on eye level. And we learned so many things from them about their life and how they cope and how they, well, how they do their things that we didn't know as a kind of newbies living in our RV on the road. And it was so fascinating to see the difference. I haven't experienced that before here in Switzerland, for example, because most of the time, if there are homeless people, I might just walk by or don't engage in a conversation that much. But there it was really, really different. And there's one story that really touched me. I went to quite some barbershops, and these are most of the time when I experienced that, there's a kind of social hotspots where people come together and then they have kind of their community going there. And you also do a project in a barbershop. What do you do there?
So last year, I trained a group of managers from the multi-agency support teams within social care in Sheffield. Many of those fell in love with the solution-focused approach, and two fell hard in love with it, Jane McPhillips and Louise Bauer. And as a result of their passion for the solution-focused approach, I invited them to make an application to participate in the EBTA Summer School in Kleinbuchfeld that I was hosting with Matthias last summer. So this is a really fascinating story about the Barbers. So they attended this summer camp, and they have listened to every podcast and read every book that they possibly can. So they are fully absorbing and drinking in this approach. And while we were in the summer camp, I just suddenly got chatting to Jane, and I said to Jane, you know, I think it must be really fascinating. You are so contemplative and so deeply respectful and considered in your responses and questions. And I think your team must really appreciate you. And now that you're developing your skills in this particular area, she looked at me and she said, Nermi, since the solution focused training has transformed my entire work and personal life, she said, I'm going to tell you something that I decided not to tell anyone because I wanted it to be a private venture and I didn't want to share it until I'd overcome it. But my motivation to come to this summer camp in Kleinbuchfeld was so huge, and my belief in solution focus so profound that I decided to use that, the motivation of coming and the skills of the approach, to overcome a 10-year long fear of flying. She said, and I flew to this summer camp, and I did that because of the tools that this practice has provided. And she said, it's made me feel like anything is possible. So on returning from that summer camp, Louise, Jane and I met up to talk about how we could work together in more detail. And we would like to develop a project supporting people who experience visual impairment. So relying only on a way of teaching, learning and exchanging that is dependent on talking and things that are audibly useful. And in discussing that, we also talked about how we wanted to get Solution Focus out much more widely into the community and accessible to people that we didn't normally come into contact with. And Jane then shared, she had two children who are black, and she said she sometimes feels as a white woman that she wants to be a particular role model and understand the world through their lens, and then talked about a barbershop that she's fully aware of in Sheffield called Fades, and that in this barbershop, the two men that work there, who are brothers, have this incredible ability to look at the world through the lens of the young people, mainly the young black community that use that barbershop, and support them to boost their mental health and to make safer choices around knife crime, to have an open, safe place that they can go into and talk freely, but still be connected to their parents because it's within the local community. They do their own podcast where they talk about, and a YouTube where they just talk about silly things in the barbershop. But actually, Jane said it's more than just talking about chit chat. There's something so, so opening about that place that she thinks has transformed her son's life. And so she went into the barbershop and she said, we think that you're experts in how you support the mental health of this community. And we have a tool called Solution Focused Practice that we think you're already fully on board with, and you might be interested in learning a little bit more about. So we developed a model that we want to test out to see if it is relevant to your community called Curve Chats. And the idea of Curve Chats being that it's something light and playful, where you might say to someone saying, I don't know whether I want to get into that gang, or I'm thinking about giving up weed, and for them to be able to say, well, they're cutting somebody's hair and putting like a cool design in the back of their head, well, hey, would you like me to curve chat this? I could ask really a couple of useful questions. What would things look like if they were just a bit more how you wanted? And what difference would that make? And, you know, what is it that you really value? And, you know, what does safer look like? And it worked. And the reason that this sort of pilot initial session worked so well is that we were lucky enough to have two representatives who work in that community. So one from the barbershop and a youth worker called Jason, who's been working in Sheffield for 20 years in gangs. He came to the workshop and explored Curve Chat. And then we were lucky enough that Elliot Conney provided a Zoom video for us, speaking directly to our participants, saying to them what he felt was really important about the solution-focused approach, and that he hoped that Curve Chats could be tangibly useful, because he is so passionate about using this to create more societal equality, and that we have better representation across all sectors of our solution-focused community to make it more diverse, more equal, and have much greater representation of different cultures from throughout the world. So the combination of all of these minds meant that we are hopefully at the beginning of quite an interesting venture called Curve Chats.
Oh, this is so beautiful how you use this community hub of the Baba, but then also how you use your solution-focused community to provide something valuable for communities. And I'm really in awe of listening to you and the way you bring together people, how you are passionate about supporting people and finding their way towards their preferred future and in inviting everyone to be their unique selves. I love how I hear that through every word you say and share with us. Thank you. And talking about uniqueness, and you just mentioned equality, and I know that this is something that's really a matter of heart to you, to support equality in our society, actually. So, and you do that in your workshops, that shines through in all your work. So I wonder, how do you do that? How do you support equality in what you do? And I'm particularly interested in the tiny little things you do that make a difference.
Well, the first one is, I think, what all of us are hopefully quite skilled in, which is the quality of the listening, you know, like the quality of the listening that Nancy Klein talks about in Time to Think and that we explore a lot in solution-focused practice. And the quality of listening that I experienced on such a deep level when I was in Helsinki at the summer camp in Peter Sundman's Island with John Wheeler and Ursula Buhlmann and Ferdinand Wolf, the way that they listened and the pace of the conversation with such a focus on that detail, such a lightness of touch about the bizarre or the unexpected. And, you know, one of my clients recently was teaching me all about nature. He knows everything about nature and was telling me about that worms have both gender reproductive organs, which I probably should already have known, but I didn't. And he was making me laugh. And I think what I do is I use solution-focused practice as a framework to be able to notice people and to constantly ask what difference that would make. And that's been really embedded into my mind, the importance of that question by my colleague Brian Thornton from Solution Focus Sheffield. And I try to fundamentally trust that what will happen will be the right thing to happen, and that if you go with the outcomes that the client describes that they desire, and they say to you, actually, what's meaningful to me is to quit university and go back to who I was when I was a child and I used to do a little internal dance in the mornings. And really that person had come to you initially because their family had hoped that they would stay at university. It's trusting that that was the right thing. Yeah.
What differences does that trusting make to you and in your work?
I guess it enables me to be very present in whatever I'm doing. And the way that I have been trusted has led to a phenomenal amount of international opportunities to invite people in the International Cooperation Task Group and all over the world to find out how they might enable their countries to discover solution-focused practice and expand it for the benefit of their society, you know, like in Croatia with those people who are survivors of torture. And this comes from these really small conversations where we're all setting our intention. And I think explicitly saying your intention out loud and visualizing that and inviting your clients to set their intention and to capitalize upon every single example in their life that they are already doing brilliantly, even if they are street homeless, because if you haven't significantly harmed yourself or someone else, you are doing brilliantly in a complex world. And I think it's the combination of looking at those different aspects of human being that's really important. Yes.
Oh, this is so beautiful. And it reminds me of something that Peter Röhrig said a few years ago. And in our conversation, it comes together in a beautiful way to me because we were talking about leadership. And he said, people in leadership often say, you know, if you want to be a good leader, you need to love people. And then he said, well, I think it's not so much about loving people, but about loving the differences of people. And what I hear, or what becomes clear in our conversation to me right now, is that it's this beauty of looking at the brilliance and uniqueness of each and every person and of being surprised by what it brings to light when you focus it. And at the same time, really embracing the differences and embracing differences on all different levels, like the differences things can make for people, but then also the differences between people and putting it to work by seeing this common ground and focusing a preferred future and going in small steps and signs of progress for it.
Yes. And what you just said then reminds me also of, so last year, so I'm also working on Steve Flatt's National Traumaticus contract. And I was working last year or the year before with a client on this contract who'd gone through the trauma of a car accident. And he was coping brilliantly because, of course, he's a strong, resilient human being. And because Solution Focus was inviting him to notice that. And then halfway through the piece of work of 10 sessions, I said to him, so what else have you managed to do since we last met that you've been pleased about? He gave me a list and then just dropped in, oh yeah, well, you know, I've been to sign language classes. So this is a man, a young man, who is living with his partner, whose mobility is really significantly affected for the first time when he used to be very passionate about driving fast cars and going to football, and his life's completely changed. And he drops in that alongside his own rehabilitation, he's decided to take up sign language classes. So again, I just love the lens that this work gives us, where that might have just been like, all right. But of course we know, don't we, as Solution Expresses, to go, wow. So I said to him, you said what? So you've been to sign language classes. Well, what made you make such an interesting and lovely decision to do that? He said, oh, well, my partner's got some friends who require sign language in order to communicate, and I want to have better conversations with them. And I thought it would be something enjoyable. And I said, tell me more about what difference it's made that you're doing that. He said, oh, yeah, apparently I'm really excelling and I've got quite a natural flair for it. And I've been learning this, this and this. And I just thought about the setting in that moment, that it was like he was someone needing help and I was the helper. And how, of course, it's not like that. It's, I'm privileged to have conversations where I discover new possibilities about what I might do for my own hobbies and life and how I might live more meaningful. And he's there teaching me about that while I'm hopefully asking him questions that he can use for himself. And it was just so lovely. And then he started telling me, oh yeah, and did you know that in sign language, they've got dialects? So you'd never say this in his locality, a place in the UK. He said, you'd use this. And in that locality, you'd use this. And we were laughing, and I just think the sort of fun and playfulness and laughter and learning that can happen while someone is making rapid, significant change is powerful.
Yes, indeed. And I think this is one of the aspects we too love so much about Solution Focus, that it's very serious on the one hand, and on the other hand, it brings ease and laughter. And before recording the podcast, we were talking about differences that an ice bath could make. And I think this is very similar to what a solution-focused conversation can make for us. So I shared with Naomi that what I love about the ice baths, after a beautiful question of her, of course, that when I come out of an ice bath, I just jump around and want to move and dance and have fun. And this is like, yeah, what a solution-focused conversation can do. For me, at least, and I guess for many, many other people as well, in an instant. So that's the beauty of SF.
And just one thing to add is I love the way that you see people start to see themselves again through the conversation, and you see their body language change. You see somebody kind of starting to strut a little bit in the world, like the equivalent of having a new coat when you put it on, like, yeah, I'm cool.
Well, you should see Naomi, her eyes lighting up and her smile, and it looks like a lot of passion shining through here. So what are other projects that you're really passionate about right now?
Wow. I'm very much looking forward to the 3rd and 4th of March. We are lucky in Sheffield that we've got John Hendon coming to train, hopefully, many, many, many people in this region around suicide prevention using a solution-focused approach. And then on the 15th of June, we are hosting Ursula Bjorman to talk about solution focus with all the senses in the body. We're going to be co-facilitating that, myself and Family Based Solutions in London. And then in December, we have these two very, very powerful, interesting people who have a very unique approach coming to teach leadership in the UK. Your very fine selves, Elfie and Dominic. With those 2 days training will commence with John Wheeler spreading his magic around solution-focused supervision, and that we might even have an evening seminar for all of our friends, the UK and further, who might like to share in that conversation. So I'm very, very excited about that this year.
Just to briefly highlight what you say, we are very much looking forward to welcoming Tara and you in Switzerland in June this year to see how you spread your magic around giving young people a voice and bringing equality into communities. So this is one of the things we are super excited about.
And as always, you'll find all the links to those events in the resource section of this podcast. So just go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 91.
So what else is it that you're passionate about at the moment?
On Friday, another colleague of mine called David Bell, who I'm working with on a sort of offshoot company that we've developed called Focus Flow, which is going to be about orienteering and solution-focused practice combined for leaders and managers, inviting them to get out into nature and have this kind of dual experience. So Focus Flow developing further will be a real pleasure. And David and I met almost 20 years ago when we were drugs counsellors, and it's just been really lovely over the last year to come back together again. He's incredibly creative and philosophically and psychologically knowledgeable and of such an experienced trainer. And so as a result of all of those skills of his, I invited him to co-facilitating on Friday a visioning session for a project that works with vulnerable people who've experienced homelessness, substance abuse and alcohol challenges called Bend Center, which is a very, very grassroots and important service in this city, in Sheffield, that supports people wherever they are at in that moment, provides a day centre, supports people into going, practicing harm reduction and needle exchanges, provides food, shelter, referrals onto housing. And in that visioning session that I worked on Friday with their board of trustees, what was just really interesting was hearing those people talk so honestly and so genuinely about their belief in their clients as being people that are doing their absolute best with what is available to them in that moment, and that they would like to provide a wet center. So they would like to provide accommodation for people who are still using in whichever way that they are. The launch pad and the springboard for that change can be accommodation that accepts that situation and works from that to make desired changes, connected to some of the really excellent ideas from the Housing First model that some people will have heard of, that I think Jim Bird Waddington told me originated in New York. When I was 21, I'm now 40, when I was 21, I was the deputy manager for this project, Bend Center. And so again, it feels like a lot of things are coming full circle at the moment. And now here I am 20 years later, going back in to work with them with my new passion in solution-focused practice. And I'm working with them at all levels of the organization. And you know, being in contact with Bend Center also really connects me to the values that one of my supervisors, Steve Freeman, is always encouraging and bringing me back to. He's also going to be actually one of the co-hosts of the UK conference this year in Stoke-on-Trent, which is where I'm from. But yeah, the lived experience should be the people informing the service design. And then that also reminds me of the work I did on Friday, the Vulnerable People's Project Bend Centre, and how that links to previous work in Salford, which is where instead of Salford creating a children's service guidelines about how to protect those young people in the city of Salford, it's another city next to Manchester, but they're two cities that sit alongside one another. And in Salford at the time I was working there 10 years ago, there was huge amounts of teenage pregnancy and risky behaviours. And I was lucky enough to work with commissioners who really acknowledged that they had to stop writing the policy. They had to use one of the projects I was working on called FKD and the Risky Business Project to find out from the young people themselves, the children themselves from 13 upwards could start to write the policy on how to make the city a safer place where meaningful outcomes could be achieved, which also was about acknowledging where people were at that time and not projecting your own idea of what should and shouldn't happen and saying, well, you are involved in sexual risk taking, so how can we make that slightly safer? And what could we say to you, or what questions could we ask that might make you think about alternative meaningful activities that give you the same benefits that you're getting from the risky behaviours? Because I think that's one of the things I'm passionate about, is we have to acknowledge that people's life choices give them some benefits as well as some obvious disadvantages. And it's us being curious about what those benefits are, that in that moment, people will usually then start to say, actually, I also get that benefit when I walk up a mountain. And that's what we hopefully help people to amplify and do more of.
I love to hear you talk about your passions. So I wonder, talking about passions, you're truly passionate about the solution-focused approach, and you started your solution-focused journey 17 years ago. So what is it, what kept you being passionate about it over so many years?
That is such a good question. Oh, My brain is firing. Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Okay, so I was first trained in solution focused practice by Brief back in 2003, and I did a number of courses with them, and it really got hold of it. But what kept it was a few years later, so I was embedding it into my practice in social care at the time in substance misuse with young people. I then wanted to go to Latin America. So I went to 13 countries, starting in Mexico and traveling all the way down through Guatemala, and eventually ended up in Bolivia. Well, I went to Bolivia. I had some money saved in a particular account, but I decided not to access that money. And I decided to kind of flex the solution-focused approach alongside flexing my own belief in the resourcefulness that you can access when you need to if you are at risk of homelessness. And of course, it's a different place to the people that I work with because they don't necessarily have this money saved. But anyway, I arrived in Bolivia with $5 alone, 20,000 miles away from home. I was 26 years old, and I walked into this hostel, and I said to the people who owned this hostel, okay, so I'm going to go job hunting now. I have an interview to teach English for the British Council in a few days, and they said they're probably going to give me a job. I was just wondering if I could stay within this accommodation for a few days while I'm settling in the location. Yeah, okay, that's fine. Okay, great, I've got my accommodation. So I had like $2. So then I found out where the cheapest food was in the entirety of La Paz in Bolivia, and it was this rice that was at the top. So in Bolivia, places that are much higher up are usually where there's much more poverty and where the kind of black markety type places are, because the higher altitude means the air quality is not great. So they said, well, you're going to have to go quite high up, but they sell some rice there for what's the equivalent of 20p. So I went and bought this rice for 20p. Oh my goodness, I didn't know that rice could taste like bad meat, but it did. I was like, it's okay, I've got enough food to stay alive. I've got accommodation. Tick, tick.
With the rice, you even got the meat.
yeah, exactly. Brilliant. Unpleasant, but true. Yes, the next day, it was a Saturday, and I went job hunting because I had to wait 4 days for this interview for the British Council, which was on the Thursday. This was the Saturday. So on the Saturday, I went job hunting. And after 6 hours of job hunting, I finally was offered a job giving people bicycle ride tours down what's called the death road, leaving La Paz in Bolivia, because people die sort of a few times a year coming off that road because there's no edge and it's down this really crazy mountain. So I was thinking, oh, it's not exactly what I was going for, but you know, I'm desperate. But I remember, and this was all quite fun and playful, and I was very motivated. But a couple of days later, I was tired and I was hungry and I was really tearful and I was scared. And I remember crying and thinking, what am I doing? And I'd given myself until the day of the interview, because I thought if I get that job, then I can ask the other people who are managing my account to transfer the money. And I was tearful. And I just said to myself, like, what's the best it could look like, you know? Where are you now? What could help you move a little bit further? And what things can I say to myself? And I just did that. And I thought, this is what we're helping other people to do. I think people external to solution focus think it's about making life amazing and that we're all about positive. And it's so much more subtle and so much more nuanced than that. It's actually often about helping people just cope, which connects to my task for the week. Yeah, it's about helping people just cope. And so I said some useful things. Look, you can cope with this. It's only 2 more days. And I noticed that I needed distraction. So there was a free football match and I went to watch a football match and I made a couple of friends in the hostel. And then the next 2 days, and then I went for the interview and I got the job. So then it was all okay for the British Council. I really used the solution focused approach in that setting. And then a couple of months later, just one more time that I used it there was when I went in. A lot of people in solution focused know about this because I've told lots of people because I love this experience, was when I went into the prisons for young people in Bolivia to do volunteering, because working as a teacher meant I was with English people all the time. And I was like, I've come here to be with Bolivian people. So I went as a volunteer coordinator and I said, oh, so what's the job role as a volunteer coordinator? And they said, oh, there isn't one. You just have to do something. And I said, what, for 6 hours a day? Yeah, just go into the prison and do something meaningful. Okay, what, full time? Yeah. So I'm thinking, oh, shit, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then, of course, again, I just drew on solution focus and I went in to eat. It was a young male prison and a young female prison. And I just said to these young people who were wonderful, what do you want to learn? What would make each day here with me meaningful to you? And that thing about not just trusting, but also being curious, because there's no way I could have guessed what they'd say. They said, oh, I want to learn about English history and I want to learn about the political situation in Bolivia and I want to learn yoga and I want to learn football. And so from there, I created a daily training program and SF was the framework that worked.
Yeah, this reminds me in the essence of my journey somehow, because for me, truly, the most passionate I became about solution focus was when I started to implement the tools in my own life and to try it out for myself and to really experience all the effects of what solution focus can offer to my daily life. Yeah.
And now, of course, we're really curious to hear the challenge of the week.
So the challenge of the week is I invite all the listeners to do this. When, because it is when, it's not if, when at some point over the next week, a person in your life annoys you, and that could be a friend or a colleague or a partner or your child or a bus driver or someone on the street or somebody driving a car next to you. When somebody annoys you, I want you to acknowledge that as honestly as you can, because it's part of life. And then I'd like you to think about, as well as whatever's happened as annoying, what qualities that act that that other person has committed are being shown simultaneously in that moment. So if it's somebody who's left the toothpaste out or somebody who's not put the tea bag in the bin, which is something that drives me crazy. But anyway, so what does it say about that person? Okay, they've left the tea bag on the side, not put it in the bin like they always do. And that's so annoying. And actually, say if I was going to give my own example, the qualities that that tells me about that person that I genuinely appreciate are that also that person's really spontaneous and really playful. And I love living with that person. And after you've noticed whatever qualities or strengths or resources that you can possibly think of in the same moment as feeling a bit annoyed, then I want you to think about what else you appreciate about that person, even if it's a stranger, or what you imagine you might appreciate about that person. So it's about turning those moments of annoyance on their head.
And the great thing with this, I can even start now making a list of all the things I appreciate.
Well, I had several things in mind too. For instance, I just noticed how much I appreciate your flexibility, spontaneity, and, well, your being here with me.
Now I'm curious what I missed or what I did. Well, we'll keep you posted about our experience with this challenge, and we are curious to hear from you. Please go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 91 and comment how the challenge of the week goes. Comment what inspired you in this podcast. Comment what inspires you with the work that Naomi is doing, because your comment makes a valuable difference for us and also for people who might be inspired by your experience. So please let us know and share your inspirations from this podcast with us.
And if you find another minute, we would also highly appreciate your support in spreading the word about the Simply Focus podcast by not only commenting on the podcast, but also writing a rating on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the platforms, because this truly helps other people to find the podcast even easier.
And as usual, you'll find all the resources in the resource section of this podcast.
Naomi, thank you very, very much for this super inspiring conversation. And I'm always inspired when I talk to you. I think I'm already inspired when I see you. So thank you for that. And we are very much looking forward to having you soon here in Switzerland with us and to not only experience your magic online, but also offline and in person.
Aww, thank you.
And thank you very much for listening to the Simply Focus podcast. And we're looking forward to hearing you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening.
Wow, what a great episode again. Do you also like the Simply Focus podcast? Then help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focus podcast a 5-star rating on iTunes, Google Play, and other platforms. Plus, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others. Comment at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast. And then go to this episode. This was Simply Focus podcast with Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godet, your podcast for a life in joy and ease.